podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson introducing some more free content that's been behind the paywall at the Anfield Rap for subscribers in full. We ended up on, I can't remember if it was 9 or 10 parts, but Neil Atkinson, who we now will know, but it's our Football Miracles series, which, well, Neil, you describe it. It was your idea.
It wasn't my, well, it was my, I was inspired into the idea by something that John Milburn found on an Everton website, and the quote was just so, it was in the aftermath, the quote comes out.
Milburn's the best at finding these things,
by Milburn, the Milburn is
the man sniff
on
them out.
He's the man on the inside of where the Blues are, of the blue plan.
He's got blue dark web.
He really has, and the 10th was the last one. But what John found was this quote, and it goes like this: they can have more enjoyable moments in a week of football than we've had in 30 years. Everton are the most miserable club to support in this country. A combination of us being unable to have any high whatsoever, compounded by them getting football miracles on a weekly basis, season after season. And it's a quote with such depth. You know, it's so heartfelt from the anonymous Evertonian in question. And it made the idea of, well, if we look back over Jürgen's time at Liverpool, and we limited it to Jürgen's time, how many of these will we find? And the answer is, enough for 10-hour-long shows. Now, I was optimistic on the first one. I literally listed approximately sort of 14 possible miracles. The first one was from Manchester City 1, Liverpool 4, when Jürgen had first arrived. I didn't even include, by the way, that this is how, you know, because a lot of this becomes about sort of defining a football miracle, the unlikely, the thing that's difficult to see coming, the thing that when you're in the ground leads to absolute madness and pandemonium. So I didn't have Chelsea away. You know, that I skip over Chelsea away already when I'm just sort of going through year one. I skip over Chelsea away and, you know, we begin to rattle through and it becomes 10 episodes of certain moments. You know, my plan for episode one was to start with Manchester City 1, Liverpool 4. My plan for episode one was to end it with Virgil van Dijk scoring the winner against Everton in the FA Cup on his debut. We got nowhere near that. I reckon in the end that becomes an episode 3 because everyone just enjoyed it so much, yeah. John. I think that's the thing. Everyone just really enjoyed, without it being nostalgic in terms of, I tell you what, those were the days, eh? Because they still, and hopefully still do, and I really hope people still do, you know, feel like, no, these are the days. The days are still now. And I do worry a little bit about that, even about sort of focusing on this stuff now, because that's what I think. You know, I think that's where it is. I think that there'll be another 3 of these will get lashed in between now and the end of this campaign, minimum, possibly even more if silverware is to be won. You know, 2 seasons ago, we had a goalkeeper nodding one in. We've got another goalkeeper scoring in a penalty shootout for us to lift a trophy. This just doesn't happen to other clubs. Other clubs don't have goalkeepers scoring goals for Champions League football.
As the Evertonian is pointing out.
Yeah, it doesn't happen to other clubs, you know, yeah. and you can, good things have happened to other clubs and will continue to happen to other clubs. And having brilliant players is obviously a massive part of that. But there is something else. There is something that I think is Jürgen-ish about it, but there is also something that's Liverpool-ish about it, and the mesh of the two, and those footballers all beginning to believe, and then the notion of Divock, you know, all of this just becomes something that no one can live with, and it's mad, but it's an alchemy thing, it really is. And because of that, we got these fabulous shows.
Yeah, you mentioned before about the enjoyment, and you know, we've got Harriet sort of sat here with us who books the shows, and I think, you know, I'd the likes of Kevin, Johnny going like, get me on the next one, when's the next one, and stuff like that, because, you know, I mean, and I would have been the same. We just absolutely loved it. You know, normally enjoyed with a beer, often a couple of beers afterwards as well, because we were in such a happy place that we just wanted to celebrate each other's company.
Afterwards, the story I always tell was, there was one time I had to, we did a couple of these during COVID, so we had to be quite careful where we did them. So the sound on them is a bit weird. We felt as though we couldn't use the studio because of the number of people, but so we had to be in a bigger space. But there was one where I had to do some tidying up afterwards, get the sound card, send it off to Andy. It was coming out quickly. So you all got went ahead for a beer. And I said, you'll be on the Albert Dock, I'll find you. And I'll always remember walking down from our office, getting past the Tate and hearing yous all laughing. And you were literally at the other end of the dock. And it echoed all the way down the dock.
And if anyone knows the Albert Dock, they know what a big space that is.
There was about genuinely 200 metres from where you were and where I could hear you. And I thought, I can't believe these are my friends. I can't believe that these people are filling this space, the dock. They are filling the dock with laughter after we'd done this show. And God knows what you were talking about, because you probably couldn't even remember by the time I got up there and went, I could hear you from all the way down there as you were sat outside, because everyone had to sit outside in that period as well. But it was, and it was a real sort of release and relief, I think, because we had it. We do these shows, I think it is worth remembering they are, you know, it is partially around the time of the pandemic, and there's a couple of reasons around that. So doing them when lockdowns were in and out, people were just really enjoying each other's company, enjoying thinking about how much all this football had meant. I'm really pleased we've got them as artifacts. I'm really pleased that the cast of characters changes. Some have got Damien on, some have got Rob on. You know, people come in and out. There tends to be some combination of Phil, John, and Kevin Yu in there, but people are in and out through them. And like that they exist. There's some of the podcasts I'm delighted exist. I've been thinking about them for a couple of reasons recently. Like, you know, people always talk about the flat earth as one. And I made up that exists because it's such a capsule of a moment in time that even a week later had gone off, but everyone was feeling it so deeply.
Like 2 days later. Yeah.
These are just this unbelievable, like, capturing and remembering of this thing that all felt very much part of then. Hopefully is still part of now, and hopefully at least until 2026, but forever, because it's Liverpool Football Club, will be part of tomorrow.
So this is episode one of Football Miracles. like Neil says, we ended up doing a lot more of them. We're going to put episode two out for free at some point as well. It's all part of our build-up to our Jürgen Klopp documentary series, which is coming out for video subscribers very soon. So it's part of getting you in the mood for that. This is one for free. We're going to be putting two out for free very soon. And to be honest, if you twist that arm, we'll probably put them all out for free because we just fucking love them. And even if you listen to them before, I know you'll enjoy it again. up the Neds, episode
some
one.
Marketing this.
Do you know what? The great Andy. They're really, really good. Up the Neds, enjoy.
Welcome to Football Miracles. The premise of the show stems from a number of things. The first thing it stems from, and I've got John Milburn in front of me, is John saw this thing as our correspondent in amongst the Evertonian internet. And I read it out on a show, and as soon as John sent it to me, I absolutely loved it. And it was this, written by an Evertonian who shall remain nameless, not least because we don't know his name or her name. They can have more enjoyable moments in a week of football than we've had in 30 years. Everton are the most miserable club to support in this country. A combination of us being unable to have any high whatsoever, compounded by, and this is the important part for our purposes here, them getting football miracles on a weekly basis, season after season. What's going to follow is, I think, three shows, which is going to be a celebration of the football miracles under Jürgen Klopp that we've all been able to enjoy. There's an element of this which is slightly set up by 13-14. I've got John Mill, but I've mentioned him. You've heard John Gibbons, Kev Walsh, and Phil Blundell. And Phil, I'll just come to you first before we get into these, because we're going to do it from the start. We're going to go right the way back from when Klopp took the club over and discuss the football miracles that we've had. How you define a football miracle is something that we'll get onto a little bit in a minute. For me, one of the reasons why I want to do this show is not to do nostalgia. It's to set up what we hope is next season, another series of football miracles to look forward to. Because my point about all of this, and when I was looking at this, and it's unbelievable the agenda and what I've pulled through just for this one, just for this first one, it is unbelievable. And part of what I want to say and remind people of as much as possible is that this is a fucking golden age. This is a fucking golden age that we're living through, and it's not over yet. There's loads more golden age to come. There's loads more journeys still to come, but this is a fucking golden age.
I think the best way to sum it up is, am I all right saying when we're doing this, for example, I assume this isn't going out like tomorrow or something. Right, so we're doing this the night after England have beaten Denmark in the semi-final.
Yeah.
And for England fans in the ground last night, for England fans across the country, that's one of the greatest nights in their footballing lives, regardless of who they support. And you look at some of these, and we've had multiple nights like that in the last 5 years under Jürgen Klopp, and that's before you go back and look at Rafa Benitez or some of the league stuff under Rodgers or anything before that, or Julio and stuff like that. We're having these things regularly, and that's why the whole Everton, that this whole message exists from this Evertonian, because we're doing things that people view as the highlight of their footballing lives regularly, not like every few years, it's every few months in some cases, because some of the stuff Klopp's done is absurd.
Absolutely. It's funny because, like, on this show. Like, Kev's here because we went for a pint before me and Kev, and I said, I'm doing the show later. And he went, oh, what's that Football Miracle? Sounds interesting. And I told him the premise of the show, and he was like, that sounds fucking boss.
To be honest, I'm half devastated that I'm on it because I've been weighed up to it. And I probably will listen to it back anyway.
And then, so that's my first point. So my second is, I showed him the list. He was like, oh, brilliant. So did you just pick one of them and do like half an hour in? And it's like, no, we're doing all them in one show. And he's like, fucking best of luck. So when you said before, Neil, by the way, three parts, and we might end up doing eight. And not just because Kev's now on it.
We got Divock and Iggy and Sadio all managed to talk about just against them. We could do a week on that. We could literally, like,
this is a weekly series. Like,
I honestly think we're going to do eight, and I'm fine with it. And I want to be on all eight, but also to wipe my memory and then listen to all eight.
Some histories, wasn't it? Started off as like a 4-episode thing that turned into 19 episodes. This has got those legs, I think.
But my thing about why I think it's amazing is that it's not a history. Like, this is still today. This is all...
these are the glory days. Yeah, you're right.
Everything's still part of today.
Most of these players still play for the club.
Yeah, there's very little. I remember him.
So, no, on that, that's part of this is you know, like, for instance, so what? I'll give you a game that won't be... This isn't just... I want to be really clear about this. This isn't the same as a big win in a big game. So the 2019 European Cup final, Champions League final, was not miraculous. There was no miracle. We fucking ground Tottenham.
Yeah.
And it was best incredible, but the best team won.
There was a miracle though.
Getting there was, and that's the point. You know, Divock might have been a one man miracle that season, but that game and that goal wasn't miraculous. The most miraculous thing about it was how shite he'd been, and then he stuck it in the back of the net.
Yeah.
But that's fine. But the thing is, there's been so many of them, so it's the thing that's difficult to see coming, the thing that leads to absolute madness and absolute pandemonium. And the first one I wanted to do, going back to Klopp, and I had a little look. We go to Chelsea and win. But in hindsight, and even at the time, that Chelsea side was rocking and it was struggling a little bit. That just felt like a bit of a statement win.
Bournemouth beat Chelsea around there. Yeah. At Stamford Bridge.
But when we go to Man City, Phil, and we're 3-0 up, we absolutely fucking decimate Manchester City. And it's in their own grounds at that point. They're the side that had beaten us to the league title a couple of years earlier. And I remember being in the Etihad and just being amazed at what I was watching. And Liverpool were just cutting through Man City at will.
I think, if I remember correctly, there was a load of hassle getting in the ground that night because they were refurbishing that stand and the number of exits didn't work and all that. And there were loads of people who got in after about 20 minutes and we were 2-0 up and people were like, what's going on here? Because I think we hadn't really done a great deal under Klopp at this point. With winning away at these types of places it had been pretty barren for the last 3 or 4 years. I think we haven't won at Old Trafford for a while. We haven't won City for a few years, I think it was 4 or 5. I think it was possibly the one where Torres
scored the last minute.
Yeah, I think that was possibly the last one we'd won there. It wasn't the type of thing that was happening, and they were widely considered as being a much better side than us. I don't think they'd won the championship.
Am I right in saying it was on the back of Klopp's first defeat as well? I think we played
Palace the week before.
We beat Chelsea quite convincingly, but as Neil says, it wasn't a great Chelsea side, but it gave us optimism because it's not really a fire had not lit under that team yet. We beat Chelsea, everyone was quite optimistic. Then we get beat at home by Palace. Is that the game when he kicks off on the crowd for getting off early as well? So you then go into this game. I don't think anyone could have had expectations of what we saw on that day.
The thing was, it wasn't just the win, it was the way, the goals we scored. Like the Coutinho back heels it.
Emre Can back heels it to Coutinho.
We put it across and then Firmino just puts it in. It's like if we scored the goal now, you'd be like, oh my God, that's us peering to death. But as I was mentioning there, we've been beaten by Palace the week before. And also, we've been used to watching relative shite for such a long period of time. And then to see such great technical football. Not just against... It's like sometimes you'll have a great game and you'll whack a waffle 5-0. And it's boss, don't get me wrong. But you're like, well, yeah, really? You probably should be doing that. But football isn't like that. You don't always get that. But when you do that to somebody like a Man City, who were Man City at the time, well, to be fair, still are now, obviously. But when you do that and you score a goal like that, and you can see them looking around going, fuck, am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with this year? Because I can't stop him back healing it there, and I can't stop him getting across. And you can see people going, this is not the Liverpool we played last year. And they're the things that sort of give you the base for probably the next lot of miracles that come after.
It was the, sorry, sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, I've not done a lot of prep for this show on foot, but what I did do, I tried to do a bit of YouTube to remind myself of the games and the goals. And there's a thing on YouTube of this game, and you know what, because of like rights and algorithms, they have to like crop the screen in a certain way, don't they, and do things with the sound to stop it beat you from to protect the copyright. I watched like a clipped highlight to this game, and Gary Neville's commentating, and Gary Neville is absolutely salivating about how well Liverpool are playing. And honestly, I'm looking at the clock and I'm going, is that still only 31 minutes? We could have scored about six goals, and it's like 31 minutes on the clock. It's absolutely unbelievable.
For me, that game was the sort of point where you looked at the way the football was panning out in front of you, and you're like, okay, this manager's clearly onto something.
This is what it looks like for me. I was like, this is what it looks
exactly.
like.
Exactly. It was a real point where you were like, because you'd seen the Tottenham away game about a month before, I think it was.
That was his first game.
Where I think Lallana runs himself into the ground.
Yeah,
and you're like,
Divock up front out of nowhere. Yeah.
You're like, right, that's what that is. There was Chelsea where it was like, all right, this is quite good. And then there was that way, like, wow, this could be. You build up. This was with, but you got to remember, this is with no pre-season and no players that he signed. And it's like, I want him to do this. He's getting players who, probably in Emre Can's case, probably didn't quite fit with exactly what he wanted. And he's able to get him playing like one of the Harlem Globetrotters, backheeling through defences and stuff.
This is about a month into his tenure, by the way. This is not like 6 months or second season.
Is it around the 20th of November or something like that? And he takes over on about the 10th of October or something.
It's end of November, early December at this point.
It's funny as well because, I mean, this is sort of a side thing, but it just shows that, like, what's happened to me and the sort of rivalry between us and City, because I remember that day we all got the train over, big gang of us, and then like just jumped on the metro. I sat with Robbo, me and Robbo were together in the upper tier, like, but a big gang was going together. And then we all just got like that metro back, and we were cocky as any, and not in a like, you know, way where you might be like, where you can't be antagonistic. It was a problem, do you know what I mean? The City fans were like, oh yeah, you battered us.
It's weird now where it's probably, it feels a bit more edgy than Old Trafford, I think now, City, in a really, really weird way.
Yeah.
It makes no sense at all as to why it should be, but it's really quite aggressive. Like the amount of stuff that gets lashed on the divide, it's.
But honestly, that day, like, we didn't even. It wasn't even us being like
no.
Bellends or anything. It was just like, oh, we'll just walk back. We'll get the, you know, you know what I mean. The metro back into town there, and we were just in the queue, just talking about how fucking great we were. Yeah.
Just sort of feel like if you did that now.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't do it.
Next one then. As an absolute crazy game, crazy moment. Thing that you just don't sort of forget, Kev, Norwich City 4, Liverpool 5, where it isn't as though this isn't, it's almost different to the City game, and the City game was like, fucking hell, these lads are really good and they can do all this. It was crazy, but what was the craziest thing about it was this idea that you're still alive in the game, you'll find your way through, you'll keep finding ways to make it happen and to force it through. And it is some let off at some moment when he scores that winner. You know, the manager's glasses being part of it, and that was sort of the first time you'd seen anything like that from him, really, and all of that sort of stuff. But it was an incredible game, an incredible moment. And just the way in which Liverpool claw themselves back into it and stay into it was just unreal.
Well, this is the game that sort of sums up. So like that Man City game, you can go, well, wow, look at that football, that is. That is like, that would fit into any Brazil team, any Dutch team, any. That is total football, and it's what, that's like the peak of what you want it to be. What that Evertonian was referring to when he said that the other week probably isn't the likes of that. He doesn't give a fuck if we do that to Man City, really, because he's like, well, yeah, as much as it'll kill me to admit it, they're a good team. They've always got a good team. They've always got good players. If they click, that's what happens. This is the moment that he's talking about. This game where you're like, like, how have we conceded 4 to Norwich? That probably doubled Norwich's goal scoring time for the whole fucking season. Do you know what I mean? But then, not only did we
1-0 up, 3-1 down.
So I was just going to say, on the 3-1 down, fourth, this game would still be on this list if there'd have been 0 goals and injury time in that game, by the way, because we were 3-1 down and 1-4-3.
Exactly. Yeah. But then, the goal goes in. And I wasn't even at the match this one. I watched it in Rack and Dolly. But this is what the Evertonians are talking about. This is the game where you go, the devil's club.
Stephen
Naismith
scored as well,
didn't he? Yeah. Stephen Naismith, because we're sharing Mike. But when the thing with this goal is, again, it goes to the football and miracle thing, because it's not a clean strike that bangs right in the top corner off him. It's an absolute, it bounces around the box to fuck, and then he slams it into the floor and it bounces up and goes over into the top corner. And that is a footballing miracle, because I'm telling you now that no Everton player, for whatever reason it is, could do that. None of them could.
We'd also thrown Stephen Corker on up front to try and just make foot hands.
Yeah.
See, at the time, you're like, Stephen Corker up front, what the fuck's this manager doing? But then...
He did it twice, though, Stephen Corker, in that period, didn't he? Because he won a header against Arsenal and Joe Allen scored in the 94th minute.
But they get... See, Everton, I've got, like... This is... The footballer, I enjoy this bit more than the silky football bit, because not just for the antagonistic side of it, which is fucking fantastic, by the way, but because when you're watching a game like this and that goal, like when you're watching a game like Man City, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it gives you the idea of where you're supposed to be and where we all want to be. But a game like this just takes you back to the base thing of, I don't even really care where we are in the league. In the 96th minute, when you've been 3-1 down and then you've got it to 4-3 and it's gone to 4-0 and you've gone through the emotional rollercoaster of a football match, for that goal to go in then, that's the point where nothing else in the world matters. It doesn't matter if you're top of the league or bottom of the league. When that goal goes in, that is what a footballing miracle is. And that's what Evertonians, like, I understand why they're sad about it, because they're the things that, when it happens here, they feel so amazing, and they just don't have it happen to them.
Well, I can remember where I was that day. I was actually on my honeymoon, right? And I was in Mexico. And before I went on my honeymoon, I'd been in hospital. So I was on medication. I wasn't allowed to drink for the first 5 days of my honeymoon. And guess which day? Day six was.
This must have kicked off about half 5 a.m.
so
as well.
It was 7 o'clock in the morning. I had to get up.
Johnny been drinking since 12:01.
And so I've been on an all-inclusive in Mexico with my missus for like 5 days. She was calling me a boring bitch because...
I was going to say, yeah, I bet she stayed off out of solidarity, didn't she?
She loads of solidarity for me. So she was blathered every night and I was like being a boring bitch.
Johnny, come with me, Juan!
And so I was up early in the morning and in this like TV room. It was like 7 o'clock. I went and got myself a beer. And I had like Modelo on tap, so I had a couple of them. And obviously, I think we went in front, didn't we, first of all? We scored early. Went by, I think it was half time, it was 3-1 down. And I thought, this is fucking shite. And she texted me to say she was at breakfast. So I was kind of having breakfast with her, having a Bloody Mary at breakfast, trying to decide whether I should go back and watch the second half or not, whether I should start my honeymoon proper that day. And she said, no, you go back and watch the game. So what happened, and she comes back round to the bar. I'm holding court in this bar, getting everyone shots of tequila at 8:30 in the morning, right? Basically, I was back in bed by midday after climbing on the roof of the hotel. There was a lad, so there's a maintenance fella doing.
Have I never heard this story?
There's a maintenance fella like with a ladder to the roof of the hotel, and I said, I'm fucking going up there.
Top nuisance you are.
So I was on the roof of the hotel dancing, singing Liverpool songs, being a fucking absolute weapon. She was like absolutely cringing, and I think I was back in bed by about 11:30.
Fantastic.
I've got very little. I remember like this day was I ended up getting out of bed at 12 o'clock. It was at midnight. I've been on nights all week, and I managed to keep myself awake until 8 o'clock on a Friday, and I woke up at midnight and couldn't get back to sleep. If we'd have drawn 4-0, I reckon it's definitely in the top 2 or 3 worst days of my entire life, because I was absolutely done. I'd basically missed a night's sleep out between Thursday and kickoff, and it was awful, and I felt genuinely terrible.
Did you go?
Yeah, I went.
I presume you went.
It was because it was a good day out from London.
Yeah, it's good
because it's 2 hours on the train.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Unless you've been up for 9 hours before your train leaves for the 12:30 kickoff, which isn't, don't do that, it's not advisable. Yeah. So anybody who was complaining about going from Liverpool at 3 o'clock in the morning, they needed to come through me that day.
It was incredible. It was a reminder of what they're all about in terms of, you know, setting all of that up. And, you know, the last thing on it, John, I watched it in The Hope and Anchor, which is berserk. when it went 5-4, I sprinted in a diagonal and just hit the wall. You know, like the video of Phil. I just ran and hit a wall. Literally ran onto the wall, stopped me and hit the wall. But it was that sort of, the manager's the same thing in the celebration. He breaks his glasses, all of that sort of stuff. But it did feel as though, and there's a couple of them around this sort of time where they are just prepared to keep going out of almost just sheer bloody mindedness to win these games of football.
Yeah, and
agree with you, but also to it's Aaron Lallana with the winner, and he's brilliant in that City game as well. We've done two games so far, and he's great in both of them. And there was a bit of snarkiness around Lallana when he left, and the fuss he got, and the flag and stuff. And you know, I didn't like it, to be honest with you, because I think it's people have got short memories, and he was a massive player for Klopp in this season, and in terms of, you know, he ends up being a bit of a cultural architect for him and all that. But he wasn't just running around. He wasn't just what he put in. He was brilliant, and in this game he was a match winner for him as well. And he was great in this season, and he was great in both the games. You know, we've talked about and fair play to him. I loved him.
He was the player who I think got the whole thing before anybody else, I reckon.
But then when someone gets it, then the others get it. And so that's why Klopp loves him, because he's like, you know, he's going to sort that out in there for me.
Absolutely.
But all that as well, we've gone through all that there, and we've barely even mentioned the glasses. I know you mentioned it before, but Lallana, like, at that moment, as you say, he's the one who's probably got it the most. Everybody always references when Lallana comes off against Tottenham in that first game, and he's on his knees, isn't he? And he's over to Klopp, and Klopp gives him the big hug. That's the start of something. But then that celebration, it's like, because he's toned himself down at the Klopp, like, in recent years. But at that time, to see that, and to see the players who were involved in it, and to see, like, the
Lallana's top off's part of it as well. Lallana runs it. He's got his top off as he's running at him. Klopp's running at Lallana like no one's business. It's like it's an unbelievable collision of everybody.
It's one of those. It's like, again, I don't want to bring it back to Everton, but I will, because I hate them. But I'll leave that on this one. But it's like, there's the famous Everton picture. Well, in fact, it'll only be famous to Evertonians. Liverpoolians won't even probably know about it. But it's the one where I think Carsley scored in the derby, and there's Cahill's got his hand in the air. And it's a good picture, do you know what I mean? It's like, if I was an Evertonian, I'd think that's a sound picture. But there's this one, this celebration in the Liverpool, like, pantheon of memories, it doesn't really even resonate. But then, no, if you were to look at that and be another club and have that moment of celebration in any game, you would have, like, sort of posters of it and all that. And it's just, because we are the Devil's Club, or for whatever reason it happens to us, it's just another one of the things on the line for us.
Next one is Coutinho's goal at Old Trafford in the Europa League. We don't win the game, Johnny, and I think that's something to sort of bear in mind. We don't win the game, but we do what we need to do. And again, the manager's response to it was to know where our supporters were, to give a massive let on to our supporters off the back of it. But forget that. Coutinho's whole performance in this game, there's a couple of YouTubes I've seen of it, where he's just absolutely unplayable on the night. In both legs, to be honest with you, he goes to maximum. This is arguably, for me, it could be his best performance. The goal is just outrageous against a goalkeeper we had a massive problem scoring against in that period.
Yeah, I think from I didn't go to the home game, but I went to the away game. I'm right in saying it was on St. Patrick's Day.
My birthday, yeah.
Yeah, Gibbo's birthday. And I think I've told this before, I fucked up big time. So I fell at who had promised me to ask for, could he help me out with tickets? Like, no plural tickets in the text. And he said, yeah, no problem. And I arranged to meet him with my mate Lawrence, and we met him in the afternoon, turned up, and he only gave me one ticket. And I kind of blamed myself and assumed I'd made a mistake.
I bet you Lawrence did as well.
And I walked away. I went back to Lawrence. I've only got one ticket. And like, and he said, well, ring him up and say he's made a mistake. And I doubted myself, and I shouldn't have done, really. Long story short, we didn't get the second ticket from this fella. So we ended up going to the Rocket about like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and just pestering people in the any spares. And Lawrence had to go into Manchester to meet this fella, this Irish lad who had a spare ticket, fucking cursing me. I'm just sat in the Rocket for like 6 or 7 hours before the game, drinking with like Mono and Tony Barrett and all them. But it was a brilliant day apart from that. And we got up there. And my personal track record at Old Trafford is appalling.
I think everyone's, to be fair, mate.
I've not been there when we've won. So the times we have won, there've been games I've missed, and every time we've got beat by the cunts, I'm there.
Same with you, Tony. You missed the full one, didn't you?
I've missed all the late ones, but my initial three Man United games were Patrick Bergen in a 1-1, and then the 2 Danny Murphy 1-0. So I had a great start.
I haven't been to any of that. I've seen United get beat. I went to the Chelsea semi-final and sort of win there, but other than that, this is my peak Man United experience. And you're there, it was one of those nights where you couldn't get a drink in the ground because of the European rules and what have you. And so we'd had a few before, and don't worry, but we when he scored that goal and that death chip, and he absolutely flummoxed the goalkeeper and then ran round the back of the goal at the Stretford end, and it was like subtle as fuck, but absolutely big, because it killed the game as a contest, didn't it? The away goal killed the game as a contest. It just jogged past him, and our end just went off like something I've never seen before and never seen since. And it was right at half time, but there was normally at half time you'd all go down and get a bevy, but there was no need to because you couldn't get a bevy.
Do you know what the mad thing is?
Like, he just passed at half time.
I missed it all. I was in the ground, like, missed it all, missed the goal, missed the half time. Fucking stupidly. I don't even know. I do know why, because I was fucking blathered. But I'd gone down just before he scored to have a piss, and then I was like, well, I've missed the goal, so I might as well stay down here, wait for everyone to come down for a pint.
No one came down.
Can't have a pint anyway, it's a fucking European night, you know what I mean? So I ended up stood there for like 10 minutes, missed all the big party, and back up, lucky enough. But again, you know, something like that, for another club, if you miss that moment, it'd be a defining thing in your fan.
Next week's there for you.
Even with Liverpool, and like, listen, regardless of what your thoughts are on fan culture and like hooligans, well, what happened in the second half when the Liverpool fans were in the upper tier and then the flag come over, and the next thing, it was absolutely pandemonium in there. Yeah. It was, the second half was wild. Yeah. When that flag come over the top, that felt like literally an invading army had taken over. Honestly, but and I know that, listen, people don't talk about football like that anymore, and it's probably right because it's a lot safer to go on. But you know when it does happen, and when you're in the ground and when you're at 10 pints deep, it feels like it's sort of guttural. And I missed the Coutinho goal, missed that full half time, which everyone always talks about, and I still look back on that night so fondly because of the way the second half went.
Well, it was funny because obviously these lads put the flag up, and there was obviously they told people they were maybe going to be there, so a few people still didn't hear about it. I'm not sure, I can't remember if I did or not, but when they put it over, it was, and then obviously the Mancunians in the top stand didn't take too kindly to it. Like,
but if you go back to it, Gibbo, sorry to cut, the truth of the matter was United hadn't sold out, and they were advertising you could get tickets, and you had to sign up for a Man United membership and you could buy a ticket. And
there's a funny story about that.
Well, I'll let Gibbon sell exactly. Oh, yeah. So, well, I know a couple of the lads who've done it.
Have you told the story now?
Like six of the Magnificent Seven.
He's the eighth. The social flash up.
Uncle Albert's face comes up there.
fair to say, I knew a few of them anyway. So I was one of the ones who'd known that they'd gone in there, but there was no discussion of them actually coming down to do what they did. But on the way down to what they did, to be fair, imagine the nervousness of doing what they'd done, but also the adrenaline, you know what I mean? I'm not sure I've had, I'm game.
And they were right on the balcony, weren't they?
Yeah, but the thing is, their initial tickets,
moved down, didn't
well,
they?
Their initial tickets were the back row.
Really? I didn't
their,
know that.
Their initial tickets were together, and they were on the back row, yeah? And they come right down to the front of the thing. And fair play to the man of shows, like, how fucked up you've got to be in the head to do what they did. They all threw the memberships down into our end. I don't like to avoid detection.
In case you needed it again, mate.
I'm not sure what the thought process behind it was to throw them into our end, yeah. They got fucking collected and posted back to them by my eyes.
I loved how nervous they were as part of all of this madness, how nervous they were. The other thing about it, John, was just going and getting something from there like that on a night like that, and the way, you know, United had gone 1-0 and it goes 1-1, and then that second half is pure defiance and it's crowned by that moment at the end.
Yeah, it was great, and you know, it was a brilliant night, and as I mentioned before, it was my birthday, and so we'd had a good bevy in the afternoon. Cheltenham races was on. We'd been at the lift. We went to Liffey and we were watching the races and you know, having a few pints and stuff. And
underrated the Liffey.
Yeah, no,
we shouldn't say it on shows because more people might.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, me and you have had some good drinks in the Liffey, haven't we? The two of us, and it's good, especially sort of a nice little Sunday afternoon drink. But yeah, then we had. I remember we got home in no time for some reason, like, because you used to get held in and all that, and often, and I don't know
whether Old Trafford was empty on about 75. You were in Newington when I got there.
Yeah,
I'd done a show.
Before midnight, we were in Newington.
You were in Newington before me. It was fucking mad. It was like, I remember joking you too. I was like, have you got a tunnel from Old Trafford? Yeah, how the fuck are you here already?
Yeah. But we had a brilliant night.
It was great, wasn't it?
Brilliant. Yeah.
Next one is Liverpool 4, Dortmund 3. Think to do this one, Phil, you've got to talk about Dortmund away a little bit. So I've always, something me and Robbo have made mention to on shows, we went and met a lad. We met a number of people because we were trying to pull a documentary thing together, and I don't think we ever managed to quite pull it together, but it was about sort of fan culture, and we spoke to like their supporters liaison, who was really sound, and he put us in touch with another supporter, and this supporter, who was one of their sort of ultras, and he talked us through what their fan culture is. And there was a couple of things. Like, one was that what they do is they've got the same set of songs, they run through them every single game, it doesn't really matter what's on the pitch, that's what the other world does and it's how they behave. And we were a bit like, so like, if someone's playing really well, no, we don't really sing about the players. So if someone does something really good, no, we don't really acknowledge it. Oh, right, okay. And the other thing he said, the thing about English supporters is that they do all the singing in the pub before the match. I was like, oh, do we, yeah. So Tottenham came, I said, well, Tottenham's one thing. He said, Tottenham came, we beat them 3-0, they do all the singing, couldn't shut them up in the square, but in the ground you could barely hear them. And I remember, Phil, the away, firstly, our end was absolutely raucous. There's the mad goal line scramble, where it felt like the ball was about to go in for 10 minutes. It was
like a game of pinball.
It was one of the most anxious things. I can still remember it was like this anxious energy of being in the ground. And I remember sort of walking out, going, watch this. And then when we had the second leg, I often talk about the fact that sometimes, like, You'll Never Walk Alone's got a flavour to it. So when we went to their gaff, You'll Never Walk Alone was like this fucking football family, aren't we all in this together? We all love everyone.
It was all about Jürgen Klopp, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jürgen, all this sort of stuff. When they came to Anfield, that You'll Never Walk Alone was the equivalent of someone saying, have you just spilt my fucking pants? That's what it was. All the way, we managed to sing You'll Never Walk Alone in a way which said, you've got to watch this tonight. But then part of what made it so brilliant is that they were brilliant. And then we did our thing.
To be fair, part of the Dortmund response that night was to the question of did you spill our pint, was to pick the pint up and pour it on the floor and go, I fucking have, mate, and what? The first 15 minutes, they were incredible. We just, they were deservedly 2-0. I think they could have scored a third as well,
yeah,
from memory. They were just brilliant. They were a very good football team. I remember looking at them thinking, these are...
They looked good in the European Cup.
Above. Yeah, they looked. I mean, if they'd have beaten us that night, I think they'd have won that competition comfortably. I think they would have beaten Sevilla in the final quite easily. Whereas we,
as Albert, somewhere in
there. Yeah, that, there is that. They were just a very good team. I think they played in the Champions League final what 3 years earlier. They won the Bundesliga a few years before. I think they won the German Cup that year as well. They were just a very good team. And I think we get one back just after half time, and it's sort of, I'll tell you what, this is what we do at Anfield, which. When you think about this is what we do at Anfield, the amount of things we've done since that point is probably more than we've ever done before that point,
yeah.
Which is really mad. When you actually go back and look at what you would class as the amazing European nights, there's about five of them in the last 5 years.
It's like a perpetual motion, yeah. Isn't it? Like it starts off with one, and the one then becomes two. But yeah. in our mind's eye, it goes from 77 to whatever's the next one. Yeah. And but in reality, that's a lifetime for some people. But then because that happens, then the next thing makes you believe that can happen. And then because then three have all happened, the next thing comes along a lot quicker. And then before you know it, as you say, you have a night like that. And it's just like, well, this is just what happens. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing I remember about that game is I think Emre Can goes off injured just before Sakho scores, and it was at a corner, and he's getting treatment at a corner, and Mats Hummels got the Dortmund team together in a huddle, and it was the most I've ever seen a football team go, the fuck do we do here, lads? And this was when we needed to score twice. This wasn't when... This
whenever
wasn't
they decided when, it was
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, they failed. Yeah, they failed. They were going, can we have that? Can we pick that pint back up?
Don't let them score the next 5 minutes.
But it was dead Sunday league in that sort of sense of the fuck are we've got a sort we've got
you this, don't have this, team meetings with five minutes to go when you're basically a goal and a half in front.
But that goes back to the football miracle stuff because that's a football miracle because Mats Hummels even then like Mats Hummels has just played in his final European Championship and he's loaded as a superbly experienced won everything centre half, but he feels the need.
Is he sure he'd won the World Cup?
Yeah, exactly. So he feels the need. Like, he, as that, a World Cup winner, because it's Anfield and because miracles do happen at Anfield. And listen,
I always say it, people love to take the piss out of us or saying stuff like that. But the problem is, you can take the piss as much as you want, but we're going to get to City and I'm going to do a fucking 67-part series on all the Anfield miracles, do you know what I mean? But that is, again, going back to taking the show back to its original premise, is what that Blue Nose is talking about is the likes of that. Why the fuck is Matt Hummels feeling like he's got to get all of this and tell him not to concede the goal? Thanks, Matt. Back to the studio.
And then, but as John says, it's also 3-2. It's 3-2 to Dortmund at that moment. Like, what the fuck is happening in that ground that Matt Hummels is going, we've got to have a big chat here because this is going badly wrong? What he should be saying is, lads, it's all fine, we're winning 3-2. Instead, Matt Hummels is going, fucking hell. That's what he's saying. Johnny's going, fucking hell, what am I going to do?
Sorry, so 3-2 as well. 3-2 means we've literally still got to score 2. So I'm not even ones. It's not enough, do you know what I mean? We've got to score 2, and he fucking still feels the need to.
The impact of that little meeting that they had, that's part of the problem, is that they have this meeting, and then 5 seconds after the meeting's fucking finished, Sacco scores, put the ball in the back of the net. Now, if you've had that meeting going, what do we do here? We just need, don't concede two goals. Don't concede one goal now.
Situation's changed.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Edit that one, put a little line through that.
It's funny, that mythology thing that Kev's talked quite a few times about. If you go back to, I wasn't at the United home leg game, but the whole, it's a myth, atmosphere, FC, all that shite that we get from opposing fans, that you could see on the television, that game, there's a really good photo of like the cops booming out, you'll never walk alone, and the place is absolutely feral, and you can see the United fans in the lineup,
yeah.
Like trying not to look, but you can see that it's got their attention, yeah. Like, fucking hell, what's this? It's not been like this before. And there's just it's a special ground anyway, but it's not always special at 12 on a Saturday. Midweek nights under the floodlights, when it's a little bit daylight, we're just going into dusk. when it's getting into the sharp end of these competitions, it is an unbearable force. And without spoiler alert, there's going to be a few more nights that we're going to talk about that are going to be based on evenings like that. And it's just, there's something magic in it, and it sounds corny as fuck to say it, and everyone hates us saying it. Why is there so many of them?
We had no right to win that game and beat them. And that's where, you know, it's one of the most remarkable, because Barcelona will maybe never be beaten and all that, but we were a better team than Barcelona. Barcelona was remarkable because we got done 3-0 there. But really, actually, over the two legs, you know, beating them by one goal is probably right for that team, because we were a better team all in all than Barcelona. That Dortmund team played us off the park, and I'm glad what you've all said about them, right? Because it's still one of the best performances first half that I've seen come in any competition, and it was just Europa, and they were absolutely brilliant. But to be a bit like self-indulgence, if people don't mind as well, in terms of collectively self-indulgence, I feel like it was like quite a big night for the Anfield Rap as well, in terms of like,
it was,
you know, us cementing what we're about, really, and
because the best pink that was ever done, by the way, we'd
only been doing pinks for about 6 months at that point, which is a bit mad to think, because we launched spectacularly the day after we got beat by Aston Villa.
No, it was about 11 months in. Because it was, we get beat by Villa in the semi-final under Rodgers.
Okay.
So we've only been less than a year.
So a little bit longer, but you know, I think by that point, after that, the morning after, we knew what winning pinks were all about.
That's part of my thing. Go back to you, John, on it, when I was talking to the fella who was the Dortmund's sort of ultra supporter fella. This was one of the things that was annoying me, when he was like,
sounds like a bit of a prick to us.
Yeah, but when he was like,
you didn't even end up putting it out.
You leave it in the pub and all that sort of stuff. One of the things about that was, you know, our atmosphere just broke your team. We just broke your team. We didn't, those lads on the pitch, and when we spoke to the manager in the summer, I was made up and to be indulgent, and he said, I took 3-3. In my head, I'd gone 3-3. My lads have just acquitted themselves brilliantly. Aren't Dortmund amazing? All the best. And he said, that's Anfield's goal. It's Anfield's goal, that one. That's not me, and that's not even really them. It's Anfield's goal, that one. That's what that is. And that was us basically breaking a brilliant football team and going, you think you're really good? Can you be really good when we're doing this? And that's the hardest thing in footy.
And that's what we've done, as Johnny says so many times, not just, you know, over the last few years, but in our history, but particularly over the last few years, it feels like we've really, and Jürgen deserves credit for that, whether he wants to take it or not, because he's got us, he reminded us all, I think, the minute he walked in, no, hang on, this is what we're doing, this is what we're all about, and he's right, we are important, but also he'll have a go at us, and I'm into that as well, because he knows how, he reminds us how important we are, and he reminds us through praise, and also a bit of a bollocking sometimes.
Yeah.
Because we can do stuff like this in Dortmund, and it was a brilliant night to be a Liverpool fan. Absolutely brilliant.
Both centre-halves scored, which was amazing. It remains Dejan Lovren's moment, by the way, which I think is incredible.
Which is boss. Yeah. And isn't that great that you know, he gets that moment because, you know, he's mixed Liverpool career. But yeah, brilliant.
The best thing that happened that night, sorry, is in the celebrations of the fourth goal, some fella's phone ends up on the pitch and Sacco gets it and takes a selfie of them celebrating. Which is absolutely, I reckon it's the most Mamadou Sacco thing that could have possibly happened.
Got to give a shout out to Tom Hatfield as well, because if you're listening, he won the goal.
Was that good game of giveaway night, was it?
Yeah, what a night to win that one.
I'll tell you what. What a win that was then.
He missed the straight home.
To be clear, it was, John, just last little words on it really for you, this is a footballer miracle, and it was that night, and that was, you know, when we talk about, and we have done loads about getting back into grounds and all of that, the last match we were at, and it won't come on this list, maybe I might put on at the very end, should have been another one of them with the Atletico Madrid one in that night. And listen, footy sometimes goes against you and sometimes the ball doesn't bounce for you, and maybe sometimes you don't have the right goalkeeper and people will make that point. But my thing is more, that night Atletico Madrid knew that only having a one goal lead when you come to Anfield wasn't enough. And even though they get away with it in the end, they know they've got away with it in the end more than done anything else. And that's what I can't wait for going into next season, is every single match, everyone will be saying, fucking hell, you've got, you're going to Anfield next, are you? Because it's going to be absolutely awful there for you.
Yeah, just talking about it now, I can feel it. I can feel me getting really, really excited about even the Saturday midday game, whoever it's against, because I think we've missed out so much of in the last 18 months of that participation. And I've talked about it in a few other places that what I've learned about myself, I think, over the last 18 months has been that actually the actual men kicking footballs around is a relatively small part of what I'm in football for. And I do like it. I don't really like watching it in the house on my own that much. It's a participation event. And I don't mean I go with my brother and I go with my mates and we participate in that way. It's a participation event where you are feeling though you're actively exerting a force on what's happening in front of you. So shouting at the referee, shouting at the opponent players, encouraging our players. It's a participation experience, and I've really, really missed out on that, and I've probably underestimated the extent to which that's part of why I go to football matches. And actually, I've overestimated how much I actually like football to a large extent.
What one of the things that makes me like football is the next one. It was mad that day. I was in the Emirates. I was lucky to be in the Emirates that day when Mane, Phil, just picks it up right-hand side. And anyway, we were great. The scoreline was weird. It was a really weird game, but we were great. I was watching us thinking, fuck me, this is a serious football team. You know, suddenly the manager has had a pre-season to work with.
First game of the season.
Yeah, first game of the season. It's Mane's debut. It's first game of the season. And with a better side and Arsenal go and score, and I'm livid about it. And then Coutinho gets that one back direct from a free kick just before half time, and then we swamp the bastards. We absolutely swamp them, and I'm watching us thinking, Jesus Christ, the sky is the limit for these. And then Mane, it's 3-1, and then Mane picks it up. He's picking it up at 3-1, and he just runs at them. And it is one of the most electrifying things I've ever seen on a football pitch. People talk about John Barnes, and rightly so. I felt the way in which you must have felt watching John Barnes in his pomp when he just picks it up, runs at them, arrows in, and just sticks it into the back of the net.
This is Sadio Mane's debut, isn't it? And this is... He didn't come in with like a huge amount of fanfare or anything. It wasn't like people going, oh, I can't believe we signed him, he's shite, or anything like that. But it wasn't like he came in and everyone like, oh, we signed the greatest footballer that's ever walked the planet, or anything like that. So you didn't have the expectations that he's of the player that he's gone on to be.
We had a lot of pricks moaning and getting from Southampton.
Yeah, exactly. Southampton again, is it? Yeah.
We're just going to
do something else. It took about, 20 minutes into that second half?
Yeah.
And that's even ignoring anything that happened in the first half, because not much happened in the first half. I think they miss a penalty and then score about 15 seconds. And then Walcott, I think, scores basically before the ball's gone out again. I think they score. I think Walcott scores. Moreno makes it. Yeah. Moreno goes charged up the pitch and Walcott fills in the space, I think.
can I give a bit of a shout out to one of my mates ago? Because we went to that season, we went to Tranmere away. This is the first pre-season, I think, which is where he made his actual non-competitive game. And after 20 minutes, my mate said, he's not a Liverpool player. It was not Sadio Mane.
There was loads doing that with Mane. But again, that day, is another one where we've got an artist here and it's an unbelievable performance and that goal goes in. I think, does that make it 4-1?
Makes it 4-1, yeah.
Yeah, that makes it 4-1. So that's the first goal I'd saw. So I'd seen the Arsenal goal.
I was stood next to you in the ground, I remember. I was next to you,
So we've gone down here, I'm sure Gibbons was there as well, and we've gone down and they've gone 1-0.
You went for a pint at 1-0 and came back at 3-1.
Yeah. Better than me, I missed every goal.
We were literally downstairs, and we scored the equaliser, and we're like, oh, it's fucking sound this. Like, everyone comes down for a pint. We've ordered fucking 63,000 pints, as is quite standard, some away games. And we stay down as a pint. And then, we've scored another one. So, makes the decision. But Sam, we see one up now. No point, he's rushing back up now. We might as well finish it. We'll score again. And then we scored another one. And I was like, oh, no, we might be missing something here, you know. I swear to God, out of about 20 of us, I was the only one who seen this Mane goal. And I saw it from the step. I just take your step onto the bit where you can view the pitch at Arsenal. I saw it from there as he cut in from the right-hand side and he slams it with his left foot. Done a celebration there and just walked straight back downstairs and went back on the air with the lads.
Kev, have you ever been on the concourse at the Cop and the 300 blocks where we go?
Once or twice.
And you've gone down a bit early to get a bevy, yeah? And then we scored just before half time, and you see people run back up the stairs as if
to go see a replay. Yeah?
catch the goal. Yeah. I'll catch it.
There's loads of people at as if they're going to be able to see it again.
No, I missed all four Liverpool goals, but by the time the third one had gone in for us, it was like, well, it's lucky down here, isn't it? It's like, oh, we can't go back.
There's somewhat, because I think they scored the second just after we scored the fourth.
Chamberlain scores for Arsenal, doesn't he? Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure someone's gone back up and has been told, no, you need to go
sent back down, Luckily, Kev wasn't up there that long.
Kev knew what side his brother's buttered.
It was an incredible one. It was part of that season. The next thing that happens in that season that I still think, you know, when you want to talk again about the glory of all of this, John, is we get the first home game in front of the new stand.
Yeah.
And again, this is back to this idea. I'll keep saying it, and I will keep saying it. This is a golden age, and it's not finished. It's far from finished, but this is a golden age. We've got to take stock of the fact that this is a golden age. We get that stand has been, I think, absolutely incredible. So there's the brilliant nights at Dortmund, but it's worked brilliantly for the acoustics. It's got more people into the ground. It's dominating. You can see it from, you know, I'm surprised you can't see it from our office, to be frank. And maybe if our office turned 90 degrees, you would be able to see it from our office. Everything about it, I think, has been a huge positive. And I think that, again, it's important to say, in amongst all of this, this is part of what it's all about. Literally, Liverpool becoming as dominant a club as we can possibly be in an era where you've got a club owned by a state and you've got a club owned by a Russian oligarch and you've got Manchester United. You've got all this stuff going on, but we're making our ground bigger so more people can watch the Reds.
Yeah, there's a few things I want to touch on. The first one is, because it wasn't quite ready, we play our first three games away. So we were all sort of hanging on. And it wasn't quite that season in the 80s when the sewer collapsed or whatever it was. It wasn't quite that. But it was a bit like, oh, we can't wait to watch this team. They started really well. Obviously, they'd done the Arsenal victory that you said. In fact, actually, I think the Burnley defeat's in there as well.
We played Arsenal, Burnley. I can't remember Burnley. For the life of me.
It was awful. But that was the last game we lost for absolutely ages. But it's worth bearing in mind that it felt like everyone had waited a little bit. Like most people, you know, we're lucky we get to go to aways, we've got the credits and all that. But most people, you know, who do watch Liverpool do it in Anfield today, that's how I'm gone. So everyone was chomping at the bit. The other thing was Leicester were champions.
Yeah.
So that's worth remembering as well. And we beat them 1-0 the year before, but then been done at their place and Vardy had scored that worldie. So
the worst. It was the fucking worst that night.
So there was a little bit of, oh, these turn up, who do you think they are? Which is always when Liverpool are at the best as a crowd. I think, you know, who do you think they are? Champions before us. Do you know what I mean? So there was a little bit of that. But also, the other thing I want to point out is, with the big stand was, the main stand before that had a bit of a punchline on it, or not, it worse than a punchline actually, it'd been something to piss people off. All the people who sit in the main stand are this and that. When they built that main stand, they put an extra
it wasn't just an extra 6,000 fans. It was 6,000 people who were desperate to be in there. So you had 2,000 or 3,000. I don't know the exact number, but 2,000 or 3,000 seniors to get older. You've been on the waiting list probably since they were 9 or something.
I was one of them. Just to echo that, the split was a bit weird. So I think there was something like 2,000 came off the list to be made available to people on the season ticket waiting list. And I was like 362 on the waiting list when this happened. And bear in mind, I joined the waiting list in 1998. So that's to give a bit of context. So I joined a waiting list when I bought my first house when I was in my 20s. And I'm 47 now. And so I've had a season ticket in my own name since 2016. It's absolutely insane, the demand for legitimate season tickets. And there was 2,000. And we were on the halfway line, literally on the halfway line, but 81 seats up in a very, very top tier. And we were lucky. We knew a few people who'd come off the list together. So we had three sat together on the halfway line. And to echo what John's saying, my nervousness about it was always that thing about what we're going in the main stand, the moan stand, people call it, but full of moaners. And actually what was up there in our spec, we were surrounded by some people that we knew, and people who were absolutely desperate to get in there. And so whether they were local or whether they were a bit further afield, that day, I've got videos of myself. I film myself going up the stairs and all that, sitting in my seat for the first time. I finally got a ticket after all this time on my own name. And I was determined. I'm not taking any credit for it.
But you had 2,000 people who had the same mindset.
I was absolutely determined we were going to make some fucking noise up here. And because we were on, I think it goes up to 95 or something rows, and we were 81, so we're quite near the top. The roof's quite low above your head. And there was a bit of, you get it in the upper Cameron actually as well. You can get like a bit of an atmosphere going up there on certain occasions. And we'd all, big surprise, we'd had a pint. And we were like standing on our chair, and we were getting everyone going. And the atmosphere was unbelievable that day. So we'd had John's absolutely right, it was pent up. We had three away games. We'd waited for the first home game of the season. We'd all waited to get in there. And I was really, really surprised how much noise the main stand made, the acoustics of it. And it fed the cop fed it back. And it just absolutely, I think it took the atmosphere.
The acoustics are unbelievable, I think.
I think it took the ground up 20-30% in terms of atmosphere.
But another great thing they did was they did those £9 tickets. And I think that was, so for people who don't know, there's, I think it's a 500, is it, Kev?
It's 1,000.
It's 1,000 now, but it was 500 then. They doubled it. They doubled it because it worked well. But I think at the time it was £509 tickets for people in L postcodes. And people might agree with that, and people might disagree with that who were listening. And, you know, now's not the time to have that argument. But what it did do, there was 500 people in there. We're like, fucking hell, this is fucking brilliant. I paid £9 to come to this. And that mindset's different. And I think one of the things that has ruined football atmospheres generally is that bit of entitlement. And that I've paid, you know, I think it really hurts Arsenal and Spurs, I think, what they charge them. And I think it's a stupid thing because it's greed. But it's greed not thinking about the consequences. And one of the reasons why I think the atmosphere is so shit at Arsenal is that they're paying the highest prices in the whole of Europe, and they know it, and what they're watching is shit, and so they're going to tell them. Whereas if you're a scouser and you maybe haven't been able to get a ticket for a while because it's been too hard, suddenly there's all these tickets owing up and you're paying £9 to go, and you're taking your kid, fucking hell, you're not sitting on your hands because you're in the main stand. Do you know what I mean? And so there was that as well. So that was a really, I think, smart thing that Liverpool did. And it might have been a consequence that they weren't necessarily expecting, to be honest with you, but it was certainly a consequence.
It was also a 4-1 win, which helps, Kev. A win always helps. Thing I say at the Anfield Rap all the time, a win always helps. But they were against the champions. They do the business. And it felt like a massive visual step forward that wasn't a trophy. And I think that matters in that trophy. There's visual step. It's easy to talk. And this was a side that was aiming for top four. And it gets it this season. Top four matters, and we know it does now. We're all maybe too acutely aware. But what matters is visual symbols of progression. And this was one, again, in the same way that, for instance, there's a reason why our Evertonian brethren are obsessed with Bramley Moore. It'll feel like a visual symbol of progression that isn't a trophy, because there's no trophy coming anytime soon there. So you end up in this position where, for us, there wasn't a trophy, and we'd love there to have been one, but instead there's this thing you're able to look at and go, no, we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, as much as that was about putting them back in their direction, I think as well that day, because I remember I wanted Leicester to win the league that year, but I was equally fucking fuming that we pissed our own chance up the wall. Like, obviously, I've got my own issues with FSG, but when that happened, I just thought this is going to cause us all sorts of issues here, because this proves to them that you can do it a different way than what needs to be done. But that day, I was made up when Leicester won the league because it wasn't Man City, effectively, but also just a little bit of like football nostalgia. It was lovely, but it was great to immediately go back to being the big bully who just says, right, you've had your moment now, fuck off. This is our time now. You've done what you've done. Go away. That's effectively what he tried to do. Fair play to Leicester, he stuck it through. But the thing I always remember from that day that fucking pissed me off, you know, was when the players celebrated, they were all celebrating in front of the main stand. And I was like, no, you're that entitlement you're talking about. I'm like that on the cop. I'm like that on the cop. I'm like, I'm a copite, and I've been a fucking copite since I was 5 years old.
You know, celebrate. More expensive
the
main stand.
Score the outfield row, and to be fair to you.
I don't give a fuck. I want to be first. But it's funny that like how a football supporter's mind works, because obviously I've got mates like Johnny and I in the main stand. But I was like, I'm happy for them. But I'm happy for them to be happy after I've been made. And it's funny how your mind works as a football
fan. Just want to be clear, I'm a psychopath. the other one on that one, Phil, and it's interesting because I've just sort of written these down. This will be the last one we'll do. I've just written these down. We will end up this being 8-part, or if it even maybe even more, as John.
And bear in mind, we're a year in here, by the way.
Yeah, we're a year in.
But the last one on this is critical goal, best goal, Adam Lallana, which feels as though it's become a theme by accident.
Yeah, it was a... absolutely leathered it with his right foot top corner, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was it the third or the fourth? I can't.
Third. Makes it 3-1.
Did we go 1-0 down?
No, it goes 2-0, but then there's like, because the
Lucas,
soft one,
Lucas basically passed the ball to Jamie Vardy, yeah, didn't he?
It goes 2-1, yeah. and then Lallana makes it 3-1, and then Firmino confirms it.
Did Vardy celebrate at the cop end with you, mate?
He probably did, that prick.
I might have, actually, do you know what? I think that was a different game when Lucas passed Vardy the ball.
No, it's
I
not
think
the same game.
Was it?
Same game, yeah.
Okay. Did he do it twice? Because I'm sure he did it on Boxing Day. Anyway, who knows? Yet it was, the Lallana finish is absolutely fantastic. It's an absolute arrow into the top corner, isn't it? And it was, there was a lot of good goals. I think the first one, I think Sturridge scored. There's a back heel involved somewhere along the line, isn't there? Where I think Sturridge back heel it to Firmino, or is it the other way around?
Sturridge gets it to Milner. Milner finds Firmino. Firmino scores.
That was it, right? There's a lovely goal. It was good football, and it was like, okay, beat the champions. Nice big new stand.
Sturridge sets up Mane as well, if I remember
right. That was it. It was Sturridge back heels. I think Mane plays him through on the angle. Sturridge back heels it, and Mane scores. I think that's the goal I'm thinking of. It was just nice. It was the first game at Anfield. We played 3 away games, as you said before. We'd drawn at Tottenham, beat Arsenal, lost at Burnley. You want to, if you've only got one win from your first 3 as well, you really need to get a win. Otherwise, you're sort of playing a serious amount of catch up. And it was just it was exactly what you wanted from the day, really, wasn't it?
I think it was the birth also of the meme of Sadio Mane mimicking other people's goal celebrations as well. I think that was the first day that happened. And it's been a motif I've been banging to be brutally honest with you.
Only got a year in. Let's see how we get on. That's how many football miracles there's been. Thank you very much to John, to Johnny, to Phil, and to Kev. This is what this show is about, because these are the times to be supporting Liverpool Football Club. Sports Social Podcast Network.